Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Ferguson, a young people's cause.
I came out here because Mike Brown could be my son one day. I don't have children, and I hope that no one, a police officer or any other, would ever lay my son out and have him 4.5 hours on the ground. That's why I'm mad and I'm involved.
Young people's voices are being heard from an increasing volume following the disturbances in Ferguson. They were in the vanguard of the protest movement following the shooting death of Michael Brown. The huge March for Justice over the weekend included a large percentage of young people continuing demands for justice and police reforms. Clearly, they seek to maintain their momentum. Their concerns go beyond anger over Brown's death at the hands of a white policeman. We're going to talk about it on today's program to learn more about the role of the young in Ferguson, their concerns and objectives, and how they see the future. Joining me in studio is Janetta Elzey. She's 25 years old, a Flow Valley college student, outraged over Michael Brown's death. She was active during the demonstrations in Ferguson. That was her voice you heard just a moment ago. Jay Mitchell is 22 years old, a Harris Stowe graduate, and an activist minister. During the demonstrations, he worked to keep peace and calm. He is a creator of the nonprofit Jarts Entertainment. Tef Poe is a St. Louisan, an emerging rapper star and activist. He sought to achieve calm during the demonstrations. Since then, he has helped form a new advocacy group called Justice Corps. He has also referred to the demonstration as, quote, the Michael Brown Rebellion. But to begin, joining us for a few moments by phone is St. Louis Public Radio fellowship reporter Emmanuel Burry. Emmanuel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. You
were very much involved in our coverage of the situation in Ferguson during the last couple of weeks. But I'd like to get your take on how you see the role of young people during those demonstrations.
I think that the role is extremely important. I think that they're vocal and they're very much there. And I feel like they were very much on the ground from the first day, from the day that Michael Brown was shot. The youth have been very present and have continued to show a strong presence in all of these kinds of events. But sometimes the other people leading events or leaders are not necessarily listening to their voices or their concerns. And I think that's how a lot of people I've spoken to have put it, that they don't necessarily feel like they're being listened to or heard.
You know, I'll certainly be getting into that part of it with our guests in studio. But throughout this whole situation, it has been quite clear to some of us that there is clearly a generational divide. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think in some ways there is a generational divide. I don't think it's necessarily all the young people feel one way and all the older people feel another way. But in talking to people, I talked to one young man at the protest on Saturday who said he felt like the older generation and some of these more established leaders were commandeering the movement that the youth had started, that they were taking kind of this death of Michael Brown and using it as a platform for the causes that they've been working for a long time. And this was just one person I spoke to, but I would say that I think a lot of people feel a tension between age groups.
Do you detect any sense of strategy and or tactics with regard to how young people plan to continue this momentum?
I think that young people are joining organizations in some cases. There have been new organizations created. Another thing is, you know, there's been a lot of community discussion between young people. They're really meeting up and trying to kind of talk about these things and also making sure that they're present at any sort of event that has to do with Ferguson and with Michael Brown. They're trying to be as present as possible in everything.
Do these conversations, the kinds of conversations that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, help, do you think?
I think they do help, because I think in part some of these conversations haven't always gotten to know talking about healing and talking about next steps, but I think it's also important just to express anger and frustration and have those feelings be heard. Because if we're not talking about all of that hurt, then I think it kind of festers. So I think that these are extremely important conversations to continue and keep having.
You had the opportunity, as I understand it, over the weekend to talk to a number of young people who came here from other parts of the country. Tell me the gist of those conversations, the kinds of things that they were saying.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to talk with people who were part of the Black Lives Matter rides. And those were people who came from all over the country, 20 different states, people driving 30 hours from California to come to St. Louis, people driving from New York to come to St. Louis. And these were all people who were extremely enthusiastic about coming to Ferguson and then joining this cause, and not just joining it in Ferguson, but meeting together and talking about ending police brutality against Black people, and then talking about what goes on in their communities and taking all that information back, and then learning and using what they've talked about in Ferguson, in their home states. And what I heard from a lot of them was that this was a life-changing experience, that they felt like they were actually on Freedom Rides in some cases. I had a young girl from California tell me about, you know, driving. They had written things all over the van they were driving in, and driving through different states and getting different reactions. Some people were supportive and, you know, like they were cheering them on and clapping, and other people, you know, were making gun signs at them and being kind of rude. So she felt kind of like she almost was on a modern day Freedom Ride. But just really thought it was important to make that 30-hour trip to be in Ferguson and create, you know, a national network of people who are all behind this cause.
I guess we all have to wonder if this time it's going to be different. We've had, quote, those conversations after some of the more celebrated instances like this over the last year or two. I just have to wonder if this time it's going to be different.
Yeah, I think that's what we're all wondering at this point. But I don't think we'll know, because we're really in the midst of it right now, and we just have to wait and see what comes out of it.
Well, Emmanuel Burry, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on your observations with regard to the situation in Ferguson. You're having a little time off, well-deserved. Enjoy it, and we'll see you back here soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Don.
That's Emmanuel Burry, our fellowship reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio. Now back to our guests, Janetta Ilsey, Jay Mitchell, and Tef Poe. Janetta, let me start with you and just get your reaction to what you heard Emmanuel say. Anything catch your ear with her comments?
I believe the thing that stuck out to me the most, because I've been spending time with people from Black Lives Matter, they've just brought a beautiful energy into St. Louis, and it's kind of rejuvenated all of us. After being out there for 3+ weeks, you kind of get worn down, get tired. Our spirits were low, and they really brought in a fresh take on how to keep going. They gave us lots of bright ideas, lots of healing things that we could do, and just plenty of encouragement. I've never gotten, so far, they gave the best hugs. And that's what we've all been missing, really, are just genuine hugs filled with love, and it's a good transfer of positive energy.
A good hug never hurts, does it?
No.
Right? Jay Mitchell, your take on what Emmanuel was talking about. I know there's some of the things that you were nodding, some of the things connected with some of the things you've been saying as well.
She was dead on the money about everything, period. I guess as an interviewee, from the interviewer's standpoint, I was very appreciative that she had the unbiased take on everything and that she could look and she didn't. I mean, you know, because with some of the reporters that we have heard from or that have interviewed us, they've turned our words. They have mixed up our emotions, you know, expressed it as if it's anger. And it's just that we're frustrated. And especially when she turned into the point that how we see things as with the coalitions that, you know, go nameless as far as right now goes, not to pinpoint one, but with the major nonprofits or for-profit organizations that have came in and who have, it's like the youth have paved the way for what was going on. And as soon as the rioting and the looting and everything and the peacemakers come in, then it's time for them to tread on lightly and, you know, go off of our emotions and then step in and say, OK, well, we took the reins from the youth and because we had the money and we had the resources, now we can take over. And it's like, OK, but where did you lose sight of what our intentions were with, you know, what you wanted to come in and say? And what you wanted to come in and do, and now it's going to the plans that you had beforehand.
Yeah. I have a quote here from you, and you mentioned the names of some very familiar names like Reverend Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. You said you went to meetings with them, and mm-hmm. He said the list goes on. Mm-hmm. I got sick of it. They were not talking to us. They were not talking. They were talking at us.
Mm-hmm. They were not talking to us, yeah. Nor at us. They were talking about us.
That's about us. I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Let me turn now to Tef Poe. Anything you want to add to what you've heard from Emmanuel or from your colleagues here?
I pretty much agree with them 300%. There's been a show of solidarity between the youth and that we haven't seen in quite some time, which I believe has always been there through different things like social media and Twitter. You know, most of us know each other without personally knowing each other mm-hmm. Through social media. This movement was started on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. These are all tools that a certain generation of people don't completely understand. So I think one ginormous disconnect between our generation and the previous generation is that they don't understand. We all watched Mike Brown die. We literally all queued in at a different point through Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. One of the earliest pictures that I saw was Mike Brown's body laying in the middle of the street. I saw also a picture of his stepfather holding a sign saying that, you know, Ferguson PD murdered his unarmed son. And these are all things that were pushed out to me via social media. That's how my involvement became so prominent.
Certainly things have changed. They're different today than they were 45 years ago. But I'm struck by the fact that some of the people that we've talked about, some of the older leaders who came mm-hmm. in, were your age 45 years ago during the Civil Rights Movement and probably thinking pretty much the same way you are now.
Mm-hmm. I personally believe in regards to Mike Brown and the Ferguson rebellion. I don't call it a riot. You very seldom hear me use the word riot or loot. The older generation dropped the ball a bit. And I'll even go as far as to say not every member of the older generation, but primarily the older men, in my opinion. Their participation has been very minimalistic. And when it has been there, it hasn't been in the moments of danger, in the moments of the crowd getting overly excited. It's kind of lights, camera, action. We show up, and when the cameras and the action are gone, we leave.
All right. Jay, go ahead. We can't see your gestures on radio.
I'm sorry. It's just that I completely agree. And Tef has got, again, everybody's been on it since we've been here. My issue has been, like he said, you know, with the leaders that we were supposed to look to, you know, and like you said, who were doing this long ago, and though very appreciative of the movement that they've made, it's time to give the reins over to somebody else who actually stays on the forefront and on the front lines of how this all goes down. I mean, we're out there day and night. And sometimes, you know, as a minister, I'm in clergy attire out of respect. But there are times I've showed up when reporters have even noticed who I was to say, oh, that's the young minister who came from such and such church with the SpongeBob T-shirt on or the Kool-Aid shirt, just to say, I mean, you know, because I'm a young person as well. And I also understand my calling. But at the same time, I'm not just here for TV. I'm still going to be here after everything is said and done, because this is my call on life. I respect the youth too much just to be here just for a purpose or an action plan to say I was on TV or did you see me? No, I'm beyond that, because I want it to be noticed that, hey, he was here even thereafter. The radio, the television, the reporters, they all left. He was still here.
Janetta, your thoughts on that?
We were there before all of that even got there also. Before, it was just a few reporters down there from Fox 2 on August 9th when we went down there at 9:30 or so. It was just one reporter down there, and then a few more showed up with just notepads. So even before that, we were down there trying to just understand completely what happened, hear from the neighborhood. A woman told me her firsthand account of literally watching the whole thing mm-hmm. happen, and it just moved us to tears between hearing the firsthand accounts and seeing his blood on the streets. Still, it's like it was like you could feel that his blood was screaming out from the pavement. And that was just like, after seeing that, everyone had to. You have to do something.
Well, if we're screaming out, people were obviously listening mm-hmm. to that. I have to take a break now. We're talking today on today's program about the young people's role in the recent situation in Ferguson following the death of Michael Brown. With me in studio is Janetta Elsie. You just heard from Janetta. Jay Mitchell is with us. He is an act. They're all activists. He is also an activist minister. And also with us is rapper Tef Poe. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to get into it, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you want to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We're continuing our conversation about the role of young people in the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, and not only the recent past, but we'll also be looking into the future. My guests in studio are rapper Tef Poe. He is an activist and has been very active during the situation in Ferguson. Jay Mitchell is 22 years old. He's a Harrisdale graduate and an activist minister. And Janetta Elsie is 25 years old. She's a student at Flow Valley. She was very much involved from the get-go following the shooting death of Michael Brown. I'd like to come back to you, Tef, with regard to something you alluded to before, and I saw your article in the Riverfront Times. Mm-hmm. The word rebellion is an interesting one in this regard. Just stretch that out a little bit for me.
Well, for me, we have to understand, and we don't usually use this lens, but I think if you use the right lens to view the situation, it makes perfect sense. You have a group of people that are traditionally oppressed by poverty, lack of opportunity, racial profiling, different socioeconomic problems that have affected African Americans for quite some time, specifically poor, middle class, working class African Americans. And we've seen this cycle of events take place since the entrance of this group of people into this country and then into the 60s and then the modernized era. And a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, Malcolm X took a bullet, Martin Luther King took a bullet, Medgar Evers took a few bullets, and the problem was fixed. And when these people died, the problems still continue to occur, even on into, you've seen Rodney King get beat live on television many, many years ago. And these problems are sort of swept under the rug and never corrected. And you look at now, you have a group of oppressed people who in Ferguson who have decided to rebel against the infrastructure of the system. And that's really what I look at it from. I look at it as a group of people who didn't have options and were robbed and deprived of certain opportunities. They don't know what else to do. So this is their form of rebellion.
You know, you said that some of these incidents that you mentioned have been swept under the rug. We can go back as recently as Trayvon Martin. There was a huge outcry following that shooting. The gentleman in New York who was mm-hmm. asphyxiated by a St. Louis police officer just recently, that was shown on television again and again. But that's gone now.
Right.
You know, people aren't talking too much about it. Yes, in the context of what's happened most recently in Ferguson. I guess my point is that these situations swept under the rug, what's going to keep Ferguson and Michael Brown's death from being swept under the rug? I mean, ultimately, when all is over, what's going to be alive and come of it?
We're not going to stop talking about it. Okay. Once you stop talking about it, that's when people stop caring mm-hmm. and the support stops. But we're committed because this happened at home. This is our home. Everyone walks down West Florissant. I've walked down Canfield. I used to live in North Winds Estates. So that's where that could have been me years ago, you know.
But is talk enough, Jay? People don't stop talking about it. Fine. Is that going to change things?
No. I think with Jarts especially, what we're trying to do is start a purposeful acknowledgement to what's been going on, but take some action plans because, of course, communication is key. I mean, even when Dr. King couldn't have the right to vote, he still was speaking to people, but also not. It's not just about talk. It's who you talk to, mm-hmm. what you talk about. Because, I mean, I think we were all at the rally on Saturday
when the march from the old courthouse to the new courthouse, and everybody's in the face of the police that are out there, because I have to remind people all the time, you know, all cops are not bad cops. You do have to decipher between the two, but you need to realize, I mean, you know, they're cop-outs and, you know, sellouts and all this other stuff, and all they're doing is their job. So what I wanted to do was start having, well, working with some different organizations who are saying, okay, well, we want to take a part in, you know, listening to what the youth have to say, and then, okay, what is the action? Okay, putting your money where your mouth is, teaching Know Your Rights classes, going through, and I'm reading off some of the stuff that I had already wrote down, Meeting of the Minds this Saturday at Christ Pilgrim Rest Church, which is to say, okay, we're going to implement shirts or something that will donate this money back to the family for the purposes of lawyer fees, for the purposes of them not moving on, but getting through this process that they have to go through now.
So moving beyond the conversation and to the action phase.
The action, Tef. Yeah.
That's my life right there, so I can totally high five my brother on what he just said. A lot of people went out for the theatrical aspects of it, you know, the glitz and the glamour. The, oh, man, there's a tank in my neighborhood. Oh, right. Man, they're actually shooting rubber bullets and tear gas. Oh, wow, I never thought I'd see this. And once you get beyond that, you go outside every day, they tear gas you at the same exact time of day, they shoot the rubber bullets at the same exact time of day, the tanks show up at the same exact time of day. Once you get past that routine of it and you get into the reality of the situation, what are you doing? And that's what I feel that I'm coming to the table for. I feel that a lot of other young people are also coming to the table for that. I think if you watch CNN and NBC, you don't quite understand how organized we actually are. Mm-hmm. You have a group of people who never had any military training. Mm-hmm. I'm a regular person. I have helped mobilize 200 to 300 people away from a militarized police force. We're regular human beings. That's part of the reason why I use the word rebellion, because you have regular civilians fighting a militarized force with no weapons. I know they like to paint the picture that we're on TV shooting back and throwing Molotovs. One Molotov is not going to do nothing against six tanks, quite frankly.
Or the water bottles that are being thrown as if they're hand grenades.
A water bottle would get thrown and the cops would use that as an excuse to light up the whole boulevard.
But again, it occurs to me that we can talk about having the conversations again, going back to that word. And I understand the importance of dialogue and people communicating.
Yeah.
But in the programs we've done on this situation, one of the things that keeps popping up is what needs to really change is attitudes, certainly, but policies. Policies have to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you change policies?
I couldn't agree with, I partially disagree with what Jay said a minute ago, and I'll explain why. What he said about not all police are bad. I don't believe that all police are bad, but I tell you what, not all crack dealers are bad either.
Right.
But that doesn't make it right. There's this culture of consent with the police force that they must protect the oath of the badge. You have officers that know exactly what happened with Darren Wilson. They saw it with their own eyes. Ferguson Police Department has committed to the cover-up, even though you can tell that some of them in their hearts, when you look at them in the eye, they feel the hurt of the community. They know that it's wrong, but the policies in place are preventing them from even speaking out.
So you got to change the policies.
And the culture. There's a culture amongst the police that, you know, I am my brother's keeper, even if he is dead wrong.
Well, one of the ways to change policies is to vote. And there's been a big effort from what I've seen following Michael's death that to get young people to vote. Mm-hmm. Janetta, let me go with you. Are you a voter?
I am. I'm a registered voter. I just voted last month with my whole entire family.
In what community?
Florissant.
In Florissant. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jay?
Registered voter of Pagedale.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the turnout in Ferguson was like 12% or something like that. And there are a lot of complaints about the fact that the city is governed by white people, that the police force is manned by white people, except for three officers, I believe. This could change if people registered to vote and then actually went out and voted. I mean, it seems to me that's where you got to go with this stuff.
And it's not just voting, which is what our issue is. It's because they don't know how to move beyond that. I was in one Q&A where people didn't even realize that
who do you go to if you have if you're voting or you're a registered voter, but you have nobody running against these people, or you have nobody who wants to run or doesn't have the support or doesn't have the backing? I mean, it goes beyond voting. I mean, now you have to get into the laws and get into the legislator. The lobbyists, and go beyond just knowing how to vote. OK, who are you voting for? Because, I mean, you know, sometimes I think where we stop is that, you know, to vote and all you have is those who know how to vote for the president.
But isn't this, shouldn't this be part of the strategy, is to find leaders, potential leaders,
and
get them to run?
It's definitely a part of the strategy. Mm-hmm. You have different people out right now trying to get the recall going on. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference between this situation and a lot of situations is this. All three of us would not have been aligned on one singular issue. Mm-hmm. You know, we might have different beliefs on how to get to that point. We might want to work with different people to get to that point. Right. But for the most part, there is a unified front on this issue. So we all know what it's going to take, and we know that you have to be organized to get to that point. And you're right. Dealing with a more politically savvy, socially savvy young black African-American than you were 10 to 15 years ago.
You know, I wonder, and I'll take all of your impressions on this. Somehow, looking at this, as I have been and we have been here at St. Louis Public Radio, you get the impression that this time it's different. You know, we've cited some of the other instances that got a lot of publicity, but somehow this is a little bit different. Janetta, do you have that feeling that this will be
always
different than the past?
I've always known. Last year, I keep telling this story, but last year my mom was in the ICU before she passed away, and we watched the Trayvon Martin verdict together. And she said it, and I felt it, and I was thinking it, and we were both just watching in awe that George Zimmerman was getting off free for killing a young black boy just because he decided to stalk him. My mother said, if this ever happens in St. Louis, it'll be a totally different situation. And that's exactly what it is. We are a different kind of people. Everyone here is angry. Everyone here is upset. Everyone here has had some type of incident or run-in with an out-of-line officer, police officer. Even myself, as a young black woman, and I'm not a dark-skinned black woman. I'm not a fair-skinned black woman. I'm in the middle. I'm caramel. And I still get harassed by police. I've had an issue with a very small municipality that issued a warrant for my arrest for a speeding ticket for files that they lost. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a lot. That we go through just being young, black, intelligent, and living in St. Louis.
If it's going to be different here in St. Louis, is it going to be different because of you, the young people, the people who are making all the noise, if I
yes.
can put it that way?
Oh, we're
course.
Clearly the ones who got up immediately and were just like, this can't, yeah. You will not swipe this underneath the rug. You will acknowledge what happened here.
You know, St. Louis has a reputation of being fairly benign when it comes to civil rights issues. If mm-hmm. you look back into the 1960s, you're not going to find a whole lot of noise, again, to use that word,
mm-hmm.
coming out of St. Louis mm-hmm. like it was coming out of Newark and Baltimore and, mm-hmm. and Detroit and places like that. So what is different about you, Tef, you young people today, that's going to be more effective?
The first thing that's different about me and the people I represent is my lack of willingness to compromise, my lack of willing to water down who I am to make it more suitable for people trying to get into what we're doing. My hair is nappy. My skin is black. I have tattoos. I talk with a lisp. I wear tennis shoes. I dress like the people that I'm trying to reach, and I have no shame in that. And I have a very confrontational attitude for people who are trying to make me change that. My attitude is, you know, F you, it's not going to change.
Yeah.
I am who I am. And if I would have watered that down, we wouldn't be here at this point. Because when you're out in that field, the young guys that are disenfranchised and not as politicized as the next person need to see someone that looks just like them.
You think that's going to change when you become a superstar?
Nah.
Well, that's easy to say. There's a whole different set of pressures there. But that would also, I mean, if that happens, and you're on a pretty good track for that, if that happens, it gives you a podium from which to say the kinds of things you're saying here.
My mind frame is, you know, I as a kid and a fan of hip hop and a fan of activism and black history, I've always waited for a person to come along that would say, hey, I'm just like you. I know what you're going through. I know how to articulate your concerns to the right people. Don't worry, I got your back. For me personally, I'm not saying I'm there yet, but that is what I hope to become and represent.
You're not waiting anymore.
Exactly.
Exactly. Jay, your thoughts with regard to the impact of the young people in this community to get things done?
I am astounded and I'm amazed by what has taken place, of course, because of the unity and the combinedness now, like Tef said about us all coming together, regardless of how we get there, we all have the strategies and knowing that we need to be organized together. What I'm appreciating so much more now is that I'm seeing the release of the spirit of crabbiness that has been on us for so long because we have been so unsupportive of each other. And we finally took a stand all together that say, regardless of how we feel about each other, we all know it. I mean, you know, it's just like fighting other cities or like, I mean, you know, in St. Louis, the high school you went to thing is what's popular. So it's like, even if you went to a particular high school, it's like, okay, we'll fight each other, but best believe we'll all stand as one people when it comes to going up against another school, because you're not going to down somebody in my school and be allowed to get away with it, just like with any sport. So collectively now seeing that this has taken place, I mean, St. Louis is different because this is not just St. Louis, Missouri anymore. This is not just St. Louis, America anymore. This is St. Louis International. And that's what's going to make the difference now, because regardless of what they've seen on TV, people are taking to our social media networks. People are taking to seeing what they can decipher between what's good and what's not. And with them seeing that now, they can see that their purpose is actually for the intent of good to come out of what has happened. And so that's what's going to make the difference. And this will be the pivotal point where we start to make a difference as a body of youth for the world to see, not just for a particular set of people.
And how do you see this unity that Jay and Tef are talking about?
Absolutely. I think it's our time. My grandparents grew up during the Civil Rights era, and they always say that my age group, we don't stand up for anything. We don't fight for anything. We haven't had to fight for our rights. We haven't had be hosed down in the streets. And now I feel like I've earned my stripes to stand next to them. They are our legends. And now what we've done here is also legendary. We've taken to the streets. You have regular citizens in their front yards yelling back at police tanks, "You go home." Mm-hmm. They're telling you to go home, and they're spraying people with tear gas and rubber bullets, but they're still standing standing up to the police force who invaded their neighborhood where they pay taxes. Mm-hmm. Our unity is not only just local. As you can see with Black Lives Matter coming in, it's around the country. Mike Brown touched everyone because there's a Mike Brown in every city and every state and all across the world.
I'll pick up on some of these points in a moment, but I have to take another break. Let's do that now. We have some callers. Pardon me. I ask them to be patient. We'll come back and take some calls when we come back. You just heard from Janetta Elsie. We've also been talking with Jay Mitchell and Tef Poe. These are all young people who have been actively involved in the demonstrations in Ferguson and also in trying to keep the peace in Ferguson and keep the violence, the level of violence down. Back to continue with them in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We're continuing our conversation about the role of young people in recent events in Ferguson. My guests in studio, Janetta Elsie, Jay Mitchell, and Tef Poe. They all have been involved in the recent demonstrations, if you will, in Ferguson, actively involved as demonstrators and also as peacekeepers. I want to take a phone call. Mark has been very patiently waiting in St. Louis. Let's bring him into the conversation. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I attended a demonstration Saturday, and I was really impressed with the discipline, the control of everybody there. It reminded me a lot of the 1960s, where, you know, I didn't see a cop anywhere except at the end of the streets, which proved that there were leaders on the ground and real organizational strength, because a really good demonstration is self-policing. And I was really impressed with everybody that was involved in it. A question I have, though, is, will young leaders like yourself, will local leaders of this movement, have they been thinking far enough ahead, and it sounds like you have, but have they been thinking far enough ahead to sustain the shock when Darren Wilson is acquitted? Now, you have to confront the fact that in a procedural justice system like ours, this could happen. And it could also happen that we don't have all the evidence yet. And in a circumstance like that, are you prepared to face the disappointment and the anger and move people to the higher goals of what about the school system? What about jobs? What about the bigger things that were initiated by Mike Brown but go beyond Mike Brown? Because if we just focus on police brutality, just focus on should Darren Wilson go to prison or not, I'm afraid the movement will lose its focus and its ultimate purpose.
Mark, thank you so much for the call. You raise an interesting point. I would just correct you to this degree and say that it's not a question of the officer being acquitted. He has to be indicted first, and
correct.
I think that's right. An issue that is yet to be resolved.
Right.
Yeah. Tef, you wanted to respond?
I was in a strategy meeting this morning, and we talked about that. I think most organizers, we honestly don't expect charges to be brought up against Darren Wilson, even though that would be the best thing that ever happened. If you wanted to see stability come to the neighborhood, people's anger decrease a bit, even if you wanted to see some of the demonstrations in the streets slow up a bit, that would be the number one thing that could make that happen. But I think what's going on, like I said, is behind the scenes, we're a lot more organized than what the mainstream media would present to you. We have plans to get community centers going. There's classes to teach people how to deal with the psychological hurt that comes with this. There's classes to find people who will be the next political leaders in Ferguson. There's a lot of voter registration going on, and not just registering people to vote for the sake of having them registered, but registering people to vote and, you know, looking at them and saying, who is our next mayor? Who's our next councilwoman? You know, who can step up to the plate in this time of crisis and really talk to people and get them to take this thing to the next level?
Good news for Ferguson today when Centene announced that it's going to build a facility there and hire some 200 people in Ferguson. That's a step forward. That's just one step. But okay. Others don't. Jay, any comments to you with regard to Mark's phone call?
I basically agree with what Tef has said. I guess this will be a quick brief shout out to Senator Nasheed and Senator Nadal, because I know that they were talking about doing the ASL challenge and also bringing in some jobs for the youth of Ferguson. But again, not moving past it. Again, this is knowing your rights and knowing your laws. Of course, like you said, he has to be indicted first. Now, what if that does not happen? I think we've all came to an agreement that we understand that this is a possibility that this may not happen. And so what we need to do is to learn how to use the frustration we have. And I know with some of the words that have been said, going to the old school cliche, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And at one of the rallies that I was hosting, one of the girls said, but sometimes they do. And I said, and that's when you need to realize that you should not let words infect you, but affect you enough to know that infect causes the toxins which make you want to use your hands in a forceful manner of, you know, using physical violence. But affect means that you'll change your laws and you'll change your rights.
And to kind of piggyback off of what he's saying, because I want to high five him for that. But, you know, we always talk about, excuse me, accountability for us as citizens. Mm-hmm. But at what point does the system have any accountability? Because I need to remind people that the community didn't murder Michael Brown. So when the community is outraged that they don't get the right outcome for what happened to Michael Brown, that's a reflection of the system not being responsible and doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would it be productive or counterproductive if, in fact, justice in your mind is not served by whatever happens with the officer to go back on the streets? Janetta?
I think it would be productive. Either way, the outcome, if he's charged, if he is found guilty or not guilty, there is going to be a change that takes place in St. Louis, in the spirits of everyone else who are around the world watching Ferguson. To your previous question, if he is not indicted or brought in on any charges, I think we've started having conversations as early as 3 weeks ago. If this doesn't happen, how do you feel what's going to happen to St. Louis? And honestly, I feel like the people, what we saw with the police on West Florissant was nothing. Because that'll be the biggest disappointment. And it's a shame that I have to say this, but as a black person in America, I don't ever expect the U.S. justice system to do black people justice. So when George Zimmerman walked free, it hurt my heart, but I was not surprised. Every time a young black person is killed and a white person is not brought to justice behind it, I'm not shocked or surprised. If Darren Wilson gets off, I will not be surprised. What happens, what the people will feel after that, I feel it will be warranted because we haven't been served justice since the United States was constructed, really.
Jay, what do you think? I mean, are demonstrations a likely outgrowth of any feeling that justice has not been served?
I think with the demonstrations, one thing that should remain is that they consistently go. With the last sit-in that I think we all were at for the St. Louis Public Radio, which was kind of such a disappointment, which made me lose so much respect that I'm trying not to get angry thinking about it, was that the mayor of Ferguson would not accept the responsibility of even acknowledging that he understood what happened. And for him to walk around every question that was asked, even by Michelle Martin, who was the moderator for what was going on, to walk around every question and to try to talk around. I mean, this is not a political party. We don't need another Maya Angelou. All we need you to do is directly answer the question. Do you understand what happened? Do you take responsibility? Because it seemed like everybody was trying to play the default game. Well, it wasn't my fault. It was him. Or, you know,
those weren't my guys.
Yeah. I mean,
Ferguson,
you know,
police wasn't out there when we all clearly have footage, videos,
because
photos.
Netta even asked, you know, okay, so were you aware that this was going on? Or one of your friends had
Ashley
asked, you know, asked for dates. And one moment you don't have any specifics, and next thing you know, you've became God because you can remember everything. Now, how can all of a sudden you recall these answers that you didn't have an answer for when we first asked the questions? Well, when did the police get out there? When did the army come in? Or when did so-and-so get there? Or, you know, when the real question is, when will you take responsibility and own up to the fact that you were elected to be our mayor, regardless of who else is in office or what you say their responsibilities are? If you're supposed to be the head of this county or of this city or whatever that you've been elected as an official to be, you need to take the responsibility.
And you should know. You should know who's out there.
They don't even know his name.
In my opinion, talking about him is a waste of breath. His days are numbered.
Talking about the mayor now.
Yeah, the mayor. Yep. The unemployment line is coming for him real soon.
I mean, oh, baby.
He knows.
He made a sly comment about the recall as if it couldn't happen. Well, I'm here to let him know it's happening.
Oh, it was funny.
It's going to be a reality.
You're all involved in that one
way
or another?
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, well, of course.
It's going to be a reality.
Let's take another call. Jazz joins us. Jazz, he's calling from Illinois. Go ahead.
Yes, so I'd first like to commend all you young folks for actually standing up. And I was kind of wondering, I'm not from the area, just kind of migrated here about 6 years ago, but I was watching and wondering, you know, where is this going to break at? You know, you had some bad elements, some bad seeds. However, I thought you guys did a great job. I was really proud to see that happen. I'm a child of the 70s. I watched my parents and my uncles board a bus and head to Washington from Philly. It was always common talk in my household. And I compare this time to that time. As an 11-year-old back then, I had no idea of the courage and the tenacity that these folks had. You got to remember, we didn't have CNN, we didn't have cell phones, so there was, you know, your life was could be gone in seconds and not even heard of. So on to what happened here. I mean, I commend you guys, but like this last caller said, I hope you guys prepare for the inevitable. He's not going to be charged. And it sounds like you've come to that realization and you're taking action to do so. But one thing that I hope comes out of this, and my parents and my grandparents, the one thing that they fought for and died for was the power of the vote. And that is power. And I would like to see this seed being planted in all the young people, including my children. The power of the vote, the power of knowledge, and the power of action, and pride in the community.
Jazz, thank you so much for the call. Any response? I mean, the vote's important. You got to have people to vote for, no question.
Correct.
When I think about voting, we all know that we have to get people registered to vote, but we also, you know, have to reshape what that looks like and feels like for young people, because you have to realize now this occurred under the watch of a person that most of us did vote for, mm-hmm. Barack Obama. Part of me voting for Barack Obama was watching what happened with Katrina and saying, you know what, I feel in my heart of hearts something like this would never happen to black people under his watch. Unfortunately, something like that did happen under his watch. There was a night where I was out there and we were surrounded by the National Guard on the McDonald's parking lot, and the guns were out and they were, you know, it was just a very aggressive moment. And I lost my cool for a second. I just yelled to the sky and I said, you know what, God, I can't do this anymore. I can't lead people to the polls to be slaughtered. I championed for people to go vote for President Barack Obama. And now I look like an idiot to many of my friends. You know, like this happened under his watch. So, and what Jay said is very, 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 very much how young people feel. Everybody's dodging the responsibility of what happened. Oh, it's not the president's fault. Oh, he didn't tell them to call the guard. Oh, it's not the mayor's fault. Oh, we don't even know who's running the armored militarized force. Oh, you ask the police chief. We asked them at a press conference who's responsible for, you know, the policing of the area right now while under the coalition of many different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I don't know. It changes every day. Nobody is accepting responsibility for anything.
Nobody. Absolutely nobody. And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, like the first day that all of this broke out, you saw, I think it's 60 municipalities within the county as a whole of St. Louis County. And if everybody is here, who is policing the neighborhoods out in St. Charles, Eureka, and so forth and so on, where you're supposed to have policemen at? I get shot out in Eureka. Who am I going to call? I'm going to have to go to Ferguson in order to show blood on my hands?
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to get to this part of it because I think it's important. With regard to your strategy for the future, what do you see as the role for white people?
Support. Be our allies. We've had meetings with several different organizations down here, and the same thing rings out. We need our white allies to stand with us and go into places where black people aren't acknowledged. Go and have conversations at the water fountain with your coworker at work who doesn't have one black friend, and tell them what you've seen in Ferguson, and tell them that we are people too, and you feel our pain and you feel our hurt, and acknowledge that another part of your community, even in Ferguson, where it's just literally in front of the police station, that's where the white folks live. And over on West Florissant is where the black people live. In Ferguson, those people still don't even seem to acknowledge what's happening literally less than a mile than away.
Mm. But Jay, there were a fair amount of white people on the streets in the various marches.
And I must attach to that the fact that I had to block some people, you know, from getting hit on. And, you know, I watched a video that was on my social network feed from some black folks who went to the O'Reilly and, you know, had jumped on a man outside of there. And I said, no, you know, the thing is, what we need to realize is that, as I've been saying in all of the speeches I have been giving, there's only one race and it's human. Mm-hmm. And so when we realize that, like Netta said, I mean, you know, in our community, it's not a white community or black community. We are all one people. We got one nose, one mouth, two eyes. I mean, well, some of us anyway. But the point is that we all have one body and we all should use it as just one body of people, not be set up to, you know, be congregated because of the color of our skin or because of our religious preference or because of our ethnicity. You know, it goes beyond that. We should go back to being one body of people and understand that, you know, that should not be what racially divides us.
That would be a great way to end the program, but I'm not going to end it here until I hear from Tef.
Right. Oh,
but we have about a minute, Tef.
Well, we need white people to understand and embrace racism, whether they're racist or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sexism, homophobia, racism, these are all things that cannot be erased if members of the community that it spawns from don't try to understand it. As a man, I have to learn to understand sexism and not be afraid to talk about it with other men. Mm. And that goes the same way for racism. Like, you know, it's great that, you know, like a white person might want to move into an impoverished neighborhood, but it does more justice if a white person lives in a white neighborhood and spreads that aura to the rest of their neighbors that may not see things the way they see it. That's how I see it.
I'm going to stop it right there. I want to thank you all so much for being with us and giving us your perspective on what's been going on and on the future. I think a lot of people have been very impressed by the way you think about what's been going on and what you hope for the future. Thank you very much. Jay Mitchell, great to see you.
Thank you, Tev Poe.
Thank you so much for being with us. Jeanette Elzey, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
We'll be in touch as things develop in the future. Again, thank you. Tomorrow on the St. Louis On the Air, St. Louis Public Radio reporter Chris McDaniel will give us an update on his investigation of the Missouri execution protocol. We'll also take a historical look at the role of civil disobedience in the region, and we'll talk about the role of the Ferguson Youth Initiative. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.